The Business on RT Radio 1 with Ulster Bank. For when you're keen to know what Brexit means for your business, visit ulsterbank.ie/Brexit.
Now, to this story.
Brexit 300 years after his death, Edward Colston's fall from grace. This had begun as a Black Lives Matter demonstration, but it ended in the historic docks where Colston's ships once sailed.
Boisterous cheering from a lively crowd of protesters in Bristol as the statue of slave trader Edward Colston splashes into the water off the docks. Now, councils around the UK are reviewing the appropriateness of certain monuments, and here in Ireland there have been calls to remove certainly two monuments which some say glorify slavery as well. But who were the slave traders immortalised in bronze and stone, and what impact did their actions have on the world economy? I'm joined now by UCC lecturer Kate Hodgson. Kate, I suppose, first of all, when we think of the era of slavery, we automatically think of the United States and the Civil War and the mid-19th century. But what were the big slave trading nations? Because it went on for a lot longer than that, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. It started so sort of early 16th century and goes on for over three centuries there. So we start off with Portugal, Spain supplying their colonies in the Americas. Then the emphasis shifts to France and Britain. And Britain really sort of peaks and emerges in the 18th century as the main slave trading nation.
And it's interesting when you think of it that way, because Britain was so associated as well with the shipping industry. So much of the money that was made was about transportation and shipping, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot of connection with the slave trade there. So it's producing, yeah, wealthy individuals, wealthy corporations, wealthy cities, wealthy colonies, dazzling wealth in some cases, and wealthy nations. And a lot of that is linked to maritime power, to shipping power. People said then that the slave trade was like a training ground for sailors. And then those sailors would train up and they would end up going into the Royal Navy and the Merchant Navy. So sometimes slave traders would be coming from quite poor backgrounds and actually kind of rising to wealth through their slave trading and sort of becoming respectable with that.
So once you look at the shipping and the transportation, who was making money out of that deal? You know, you would have had ship owners, you would have had captains. How did that sort of triangle of money work?
So in places like Britain, obviously you've got the captain plays a key role. The outfitters of the ship, like the owners of the ship, obviously are making money there. You've got other industries, so things like the textile industries of Europe were providing their produce, and they were growing out of the slave trade as well. Other industries, because obviously, so I'll explain, it was known as the triangular trade, the slave trade. So the ships were outfitted in Europe. They were filled up with textiles and alcohol and weapons and beads and all kinds of trading goods taken to Africa. They were then traded for human beings with Africans, and then those people were taken across the Atlantic in chains, 12.5 million of them over this 3.5 centuries, and there they were sold to plantation owners who needed the workforce in their plantations, and then the ships would be loaded up again with sugar and coffee and all of the other colonial produce that people in Europe had come to quite know and like by this time, and that produce was brought back to Europe and then sold in Europe. So it was potentially extremely lucrative trade because those people could make money at every stage along the way.
Now, for these slave traders and those in the shipping industry, things could go wrong for them. For example, ships could sink. That involves then the insurance industry, which is a very old business, and insurance would have been part of this too.
Yeah, absolutely. So banks and insurance obviously were also making money here. Now, in the United States, which you brought up earlier, slaves were actually used as collateral on loans in the US, and then the banks would possess the slaves if the owner defaulted on the loan. Obviously, shipping companies were making money with all of this shipping of produce. The insurance industry, yes, so maritime insurance, like shipping insurance, really takes off during this period. And there's been research done by some of my former colleagues in the UK that has suggested, quite recent research that suggested that potentially 40% or more of maritime insurance could have been linked to slavery at this point in the UK.
And it's also interesting when we think about the United States, and you mentioned about the millions of slaves that were brought across the Atlantic, but most of them didn't go to the United States. They went to the Caribbean and Brazil, because sugar was a big part of that, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. We think about the US, but actually Brazil and the Caribbean, as you say, exactly, were the two biggest destinations of the slave trade. So 5.8 million Africans were shipped to Brazil during the slave trade, not many less to the Caribbean. Those are the two main areas, yeah.
Now, Edward Colston, who hit the headlines obviously this week, he was said to be responsible for transporting 84,000 slaves, 19,000 of whom died. I mean, what was the situation with fatalities on board these ships, and what were the financial implications there?
Yeah, I mean, the conditions were just sort of unimaginable, really. I mean, if you can think of like a fairly small sailing ship, maybe 300 or 400 people crammed into the below decks, with barely enough room to turn over. I mean, the conditions were appalling. The mortality rate was high, as you say, exactly. So that was one risk, the fact that the cargo, these people would die en route, obviously, or get sick. The crew could also get sick or die. The ship could be captured by pirates, buccaneers, privateers, all of these kind of various forces working in the Atlantic at this time and in the Caribbean. The ship could be captured by enemy forces. So Britain and France were at war quite a lot of this period. So they would be trying to capture each other's ships while they were at war. And then slave uprisings as well was perhaps the biggest sort of risk factor in peacetime, would have been slave uprisings. Perhaps even 10% of voyages were affected by some kind of uprising among the enslaved Africans, especially as they saw, you know, their home disappearing. There was quite a high chance that they would rise up and fight.
I remember that featuring in the Steven Spielberg film Amistad, where he dealt with that issue as well. What about Irish connections, Kate? Were there many? There was one guy, Anton Welsh. Tell me about him.
Yeah, so Anton Welsh was a guy of Irish descent. His family were dispossessed under Cromwell and went to France. He was orphaned very young, so came from not a particularly kind of well-known or wealthy background, and rises, as was the case of many of these slave traders, really rises to become... So he captains a slave trip to Africa when he was 25. By the time he was in his 30s, he was a multimillionaire, and he married into another Irish family that also had quite a lot of money from slaving and from shipping. Basically works his way up to become one of the richest men in Nantes. I mean, it's difficult to sort of quantify that, but we know that he gave his brother a chateau in the Loire Valley for a birthday present. So this is like exceptionally wealthy people. And he's also an interesting example because he shows us the connections between slave trading and then what was going on in the Caribbean and in the plantations. His family ended up owning quite a lot of plantations in the Caribbean, and his granddaughter was one of the biggest claimants. We've seen this with the British slave trading database. So his granddaughter claimed not British money for compensation, but French for compensation.
And that British database you mentioned, that showed up is that the one that showed up the ancestors of, let's say, people around today whose families way back in the past would have profited from slavery?
Yeah, that's correct, exactly.
So well-known names there.
Yeah, there were, yeah. So this came out in 2015, obviously hit the headlines because people like David Cameron, who was the Prime Minister at the time, his family had benefited from these compensation payments for having owned slaves in the past. The database showed that there was really quite a lot of normal, regular people, you know, clergymen and regular middle-class people that had benefited from this. There's a lot of right honourables and barons and lords as well. And the database also showed, talking about Irish connections, that there were over 100 people living in Ireland at the time who benefited from this compensation money when slavery was abolished in the British Empire.
Well, there you go. It shows you the old motto of follow the money, and you can learn an awful lot about these things. Kate Hodgson, UCC lecturer, thank you very much for joining us on the programme.